Anyway. How do I keep this totally out of the way? All right. Anyway. Okay. So first of all, thanks again, Goodmans. And again, we're totally ignoring this. This is a recording. Just exists here. It's not there. Anyway. So thanks again for hosting. Really bad mess. All right. So now where we're holding, what I want to do is basically really start Katras. And what that means is there are a few basic rules that come out of Katras that when we start with these rules, it builds the fundamental building blocks of everything that happens in the kitchen. So you're going to think like with some of these terms, like, okay, why does that matter? The reason why it matters is because without understanding certain terms like Ina Ben Yomo, Tam Ke Iker, and I'm just throwing out terms, so then we're not actually going to understand anything, and that's going to have the basis for everything. So we have a few questions, and let's just start with a few questions here. Anyone can volunteer to do number one? Oh, sorry. Oh, you got it. Anyone can volunteer to do number one? It's okay. No one has to.
My friend just moved into an apartment and wants to know why he has to purchase two sets of dishes, one for meat, one for dairy. He said he'll be careful to clean them well between use. So what am I supposed to tell him?
Right? So practically, by the way, this happens a lot. Like, how do we explain to someone why you have to have two sets of dishes? And really, I'm not talking about to like your non-Jewish neighbor next door. I'm talking our friend wants to know why do I have to have two sets of dishes? Right? Yeah. Ever think of that?
Or can't you just have glass?
Or glass. Okay, well, are you Sparty? You're not Sparty. Okay, we'll get to that. Anyone who's Sparty? Maybe. It's actually interesting.
As long as everything's told and you don't cut hard into the dishes, would it be okay?
Oh, so you're throwing out some like interesting terms here, right? Like cutting, cold. It's true. I'm saying cooking regular, like regular cooking dishes, regular everything. I will use, and it will be perfectly, perfectly clean between use. Mm-hmm. What's the problem? Right? Anyone ever think about this one? I don't know. Anything like hit you? Like, yeah, what?
I don't know. Like, I'm like trying to think.
Right? I tell you, it's a good question. Meat and dairy. There you go. It's also, it's a problem. Right? Like, I'm telling you, that's a fundamental question that everything hinges on. Good. So, fine. Let's do the second question. Yes, this has happened. It sounds crazy, but again, like every week, you know, take whatever maybe happened, maybe didn't. This, it sounds crazy, but I was cooking chicken soup for Shabbos, and my daughter, all upset and throwing a tantrum, threw a string cheese, and yes, it landed in the soup. So if I took out all the cheese, can we still eat the soup? You know, totally ladled out. I even ladled out a little extra of the soup. That way I'm sure there's no string cheese in the soup. Nice hot chicken soup. Am I allowed to eat the soup? Right? Someone asked this, what are you going to do, you know?
How long was the cheese in the...
It was in there, you know? It was in...
Before it's, you realize, it's like, that's not a potato.
Right, exactly. Well, at that point... Right, so what would happen? And you know, this is like the classic, the drop of milk falls in the chon question, right? Like, how often does that happen? I don't know how often, but I actually specifically remember that my mother-in-law had, it was like I was newly married. My mother-in-law had like a roast sitting on the counter, like cooling down, and it was still hot though. And I was making my daughter's, no, it can't be, we were newly married. We'd been married for a little while, and because I was making a bottle for my daughter, and I remember like I fumbled the bottle, and it was milk, like the substitute, the formula. That's total dairy. And fumbled, and it was like slow motion, flying in the air, landed on the counter, splashed onto the meat. And here I am, learning kashrus for the first time, thinking, oh gosh.
Whoops.
So my father-in-law walks in, he's like, let's just slice that part off. So he sliced that part off, my mother-in-law comes in, she's like, who ruined the roast, you know? So I'm saying, such things happen. Right, so can I just take it out, and is it okay? Right, it doesn't sound so kosher, but like, maybe it's not a problem. And the last one, I've heard of bittul b'shishim. You've heard nullification in 60. Everyone's heard of bittul b'shishim, nullification in 60. Magic number. Like, why? We made this one up, right? I mean, listen, if we go back to the comedian Ashley Blaker, so according to him, we made up a lot of things. And then some of those jokes were borderline, but they, you know, no, I'm kidding. Ashley Blaker, they were beautiful. I love them. Okay, so anyway, right, bittul b'shishim, 60. We made that up. What's the story with that? So just to realize, you know, let's just start with a few terms. So there's a term that we're going to source and we're going to see called tam ke'ikr, which means, as we've titled it, taste is of the essence. What that means is you don't have to have a physical item. Well, let's say I have a treif piece of pork, right? That's as treif as you get. That obviously I'm not allowed to eat it. Now, anytime the taste comes out of that, you know, let's say it's mixed into something else and the taste is exuded, we consider the taste of something that's treif or the taste of something kosher, the taste of something to be its essence. So if I somehow am able to eat that taste that's imbued into something else, it's as if I'm eating the actual item. So, for example, and this is where we get into step one. No, that's not where it is. Like this. And this is, how do we open this thing? Here we go. Okay, let's imagine pork is red, okay? So this is an important way to actually view it. The way taste works is that it goes into something. And even if I were to take it out, it slowly spreads into the rest of the food. Now this is not equally spreading. I don't know if we give it time how much it'll take to spread, but you can imagine that it basically spreads and colors the water. Now, why I'm showing this to you is taste has the ability to spread 60 times its volume. Meaning, if I have a piece of food that is, you know, X units large, so it's able to spread and able to imbue 60 times its volume. So we're going to source this exactly where this came from. The rabbis didn't just make it up. You know, it comes from something in the Torah to realize they calculated that. But just look at this. Slowly, it's basically going to spread and turn this entire thing into red. So you can imagine that that's essentially what happens with taste. I put food into something hot, and we'll talk about how taste transfers at some point. But I put it in, and that taste slowly spreads throughout the entire food. So it doesn't matter if I take out the actual item. If the taste went in, it's as if I'm eating the actual item itself. And that means whether meat into dairy, dairy into meat, or treif into anything else. And that's what we call in this term, tam ki'ikr. Taste is like the essence. It's like the main thing. Again, it's sourced. Well, this time we'll actually learn, you know, a source or two. It's here. Now, tam, taste, can be transferred through a few different ways. You can either have a physical item that goes into something and the taste is exuded. You can have the taste imbued into the walls of kalim, of cooking ware, and things like that, right? It's hard to tell, but often with things like wood, so this, actually, within 24 hours at some point, there was a rim when we had garlic in here. It's since gone away, probably fully absorbed. Wood is highly absorbent. If I were to cook in wood or have something in here, so you would actually see it when you remove it afterwards, even after you clean it. The taste is absorbed into the actual vessel itself, into the actual kli, right? We'll get into how does that work with metal today, because how absorbent is metal? The answer is not really, maybe, right? So we'll have to deal with that. But for sure, wood, you know, fissures, cracks, and even that, it's a porous material that taste goes into. So essentially, taste has the ability to slowly spread into things, and I have to contend with that taste as if I have the physical object there, right? You'll say, I don't see anything. It doesn't matter. The taste itself has been imbibed, imbued, put into the item. So where does that exactly come from? So if we look at source one, it's actually an interesting thing. So the pasuk, I have it in brackets over here in parentheses, by a nazir. It says, Miyayin v'sheicher yazir chometz, yazir chometz yayin v'chometz sheicher lo yishte. So a nazir, who basically takes the vow not to drink wine, not to cut his hair and everything, he sanctified himself to God, so he's not allowed to drink wine. Now that means any wine, what's the word, not additives? Wine products. Wine products. Anything that has to do with wine. The key line here is v'chol mishras anavim lo yishta. Any soaked grapes, he's not allowed to drink. What that meant is you'd have grapes, they're not crushed, nothing. They're just sitting in water. And any taste that goes into that water from those grapes, even though they're not crushed, even though they're not fissured, even though they're not cracked, so not exuding their juice, they still give off a taste. See, he's not allowed to have that. So somehow, we basically say the taste is like the grapes themselves, to the point that the nazir is not allowed to have it. So already from a pasuk in the Torah, we see the Torah considers, and there are a few other examples, we see the Torah considers taste like the actual item, or like the actual drink, right? So the Gemara, after the parentheses, says, Mishra, soaking, litain tam ki'ikr. Soaking the grapes basically teaches us that taste is ki'ikr. Taste is like the essence. Taste is like the actual food itself. Shim shara anavim b'mayim, that if I were to soak grapes in water, v'yesh behem tam yain, and then it would exude a certain taste of wine, even though I didn't actually cut or break the grapes in the water, chayev. So he would be obligated, you know, he'd have transgressed, he'd been over on being a Nazir by having this. So that's the first source that we see straight from the Torah. And the Gemara explains that the taste is like the actual item itself. Another source, and this is very practical, that Rabbi Akiva says, Tam ki'ikr, again, taste is like the essence, minayin, minale, how do I know? Where do I get it from? So one example is Mishra, soaking the grapes. Rabbi Akiva says, Yalif migu'uli goyim. He says, we learn it from essentially the vessels of the non-Jews, that in the Midbar, we were commanded to clean them. Right, when we got all the vessels, all the kelim, all the, by the way, someone figure a better word for cookware. I mean, vessels. It's like, I feel like I'm reading the King James Bible, right? Like, I'm saying vessels. What's a better word? Cookware? But that doesn't include this beautiful glass here. So I don't know. I seriously, for years, I've been like, kashrus this. And every time I come to the word, I'm like, you know, vessels, kelim. Someone give me another word.
It's
okay.
It's hard to find an overarching word to include everything.
Correct. So cookware is different than eating dinnerware, eatingware. Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll call it cookware because I can't with the vessels. Yeah. I'm like King James, you know? So basically cookware had to be cleansed. And over there, it's not that it just had to be cleaned, but anything that had been cooked in fire had to be cleansed by fire. Anything that was cooked in water had to be boiled in water. And we'll eventually get into this about kasher and kalim and how and why and the like. But actually the why is because, again, taste goes in. And so Hashem was telling us, you have to get the taste out. I am not eating pork. I'm literally not. It's not there. I don't even see anything. It's perfectly clean. Were there things perfectly clean back then? Maybe not, but you could get perfectly clean. And even then, you still have to kosher it. Why? Because the taste is inside of it. The taste goes in. And from there, it learns it was forbidden to eat out of those vessels, out of those cookware, even without cleansing them through fire or through water and the like. So we see basically two sources that tell me that the taste is like the actual food itself, right? I seem to have lost my original paper. Here we go. So those are the original two sources. Now, where do we get the idea that it goes 60 times itself, right? And by the way, the reason why I'm like going through these specific sources is because I think it's really key to realize that this comes from somewhere. It's not just like we made up taste is like the essence and it matters, because all of kashrus, anything that happens in our kitchen, fully depends on this right here. So if it's just like nebulous out there, it's very like, I don't know, okay, what's the big deal? But like to realize it's totally sourced in the Torah, in as much as Hashem was telling us, you have to be careful about this, it clearly comes to light that that's like, that's an issue. So in source 3, usually I'm good at like technology and typing things. For some reason, the shins are missing. So, okay, we'll try it.
They're not missing, they're just windows and stuff.
Yeah, they're just windows into the soul, you know, I don't know. Shin, okay. So in source 3, the Gemara in Chulin says, Amar Rebbe Chia bar Abba, Amar Rebbe Yehoshua ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara. That should be no excuse to read some of these words and some of them don't have shins. But okay, so Kol Isurin Shebatorah B'shishim. Anything that is in the Torah that's forbidden is nullified in 60. So okay, now I made up that number, right? Where'd it come from? So the answer is Mizroa B'Shela. It comes from the leg bone or the foreleg that was cooked. And what's that case? Let's just outside for a second. The Nazir, yet again, when he would finish his Naziris, when he would finish, or what was it, he would break, he had to bring, I think when he would finish, he would have to bring a korban. He would have to bring a chatas, because again, it was a nice thing that he did this, but it's not such a positive thing. You know, it's two aspects to the Nazir. So he would bring a korban. He would bring it, it was offered, and then it was all cooked together in one pot, this ram. Now, some of the ram went to the Kohen, right? Some of the ram was eaten by the Kohanim. That couldn't be eaten by the Nazir himself. The Nazir, let's say he wasn't a Kohen, couldn't eat that, but he was allowed to eat the rest of the animal. So all of a sudden, you have in this pot the leg of the animal that is totally forbidden to a regular guy and only to the Kohen, mixed with the rest of the animal. And we learned that the taste is of the essence. So I don't care if you remove the leg, the taste of the leg being cooked with the rest of it goes into the rest. So then it's as if the Nazir is eating that which can only be eaten by the Kohen. Makes sense, right? It doesn't work. So from the fact that the Gemara allows it, from the fact that the Torah allows that, they said, Man de'amar b'shishim. So the person who thought that there's an idea of nullification in 60, so he assumes basar vatsamos, bahade basar vatsamos, Misharinan. He assumes that if you were to take the amount that's in the leg, the bones plus the meat, and were to weigh it or measure it against the rest of the body, bones and meat, you would come out to a ratio of 1 to 60. And from the fact that, and they go through the calculations, but from that calculation, and we know how much was in there and how large the animal was and the like, we come out with 1 to 60. And that means that it was okay for him to eat it. So, moving backwards, he's not allowed, or moving forwards, he's not allowed to eat if the taste from that which only goes to the Kohen is in the rest of the food. So why is he... So why is he allowed to eat it, right? Therefore, we have to assume that the only way it was permissible for him to eat it... Hi, Ruben, welcome. The only reason it was permissible for him to eat it was because it was nullified. And what was that ratio of nullification? 1 to 60, right?
So, okay. This is not the source that food spreads 160?
Well, that's the assumption. Again, right. Food spreads 160... So why would it make sense that I'm able to nullify 1 in 60?
Right.
It must mean that food is able to exude 60 times its amount, 60 That's, times okay, its taste. Okay. I misspoke when I said, we'll do a recap in a second. When I said that it spreads 60 times its amount, I didn't mean it only spreads up to 60 yards, you know what I mean? Like the 60-yard line doesn't go past there.
Right.
What I meant is if you have a unit of 1, whatever that is, centimeters, me, I don't know.
I'd say it's 1 drop of...
Oh, yeah, 1 drop of food coloring. If you have 1 drop of... Thank you. That's why we invite you. So 1 drop of food coloring, and it goes into here. So I would need 60 drops of water to dilute that taste, right? Okay, there's something special about this, the fact that it's colored, and there probably was 60 units against that. There are certain things that are not nullified. We'll get to that. But we're just talking baseline. The general idea is something can only carry up 60 times its volume in taste. It spreads. In order to nullify that, I need 60 times that volume. Now it's a beautiful thing. We didn't make up 60, right? It comes from certain calculations and an awareness that there's a taste and it needs to be nullified. It needs to be diluted. Now the beauty of that is if I have a taste, which the taste is like the tray food itself, if I'm able to dilute it so I can't taste it anymore, then it's as if it doesn't exist. And I'm back to kosher, right? That's basically the logical progression. And that really matters because now we understand why the first question, if someone calls up with a question, they're like, well, was there 60 units against it? Maybe. And we'll talk soon the other very common question of, well, has it been 24 hours? So we'll get to why that matters. But okay. Yeah, like every question that ever comes, 24 hours, right? It's, no, it's true.
Does it matter if it's like solid versus liquid? So like the roast is solid versus a pot of soup.
Yes, it does matter. There are different types of mixes, right? Because you're thinking, my milk case of the roast, it dropped onto the roast. It's not being in what they call mise pachet. It's not spreading through the entire roast. It kind of stays in a certain area.
Being absorbed into the roast.
Right.
There's two categories, right? Something that's wet and something that's dry.
Yeah, there's basically two categories. What we would call lach balach or yavesh biyavesh, which two things that are dry that mix, two things that are wet that mix. Mm-hmm. By the way, it doesn't have to be specifically dry or specifically wet. All those are stand-ins for really what we mean to say, could the taste spread or is it fully integrated and mixed? So that's a great question. When it comes to a roast or the like, cutting off the outer piece might actually help because I got rid of any area that it spread. But the best example is when we're talking about cooking like in water and the like, so that like the food coloring, the drop goes into the water and after a while fully integrates and spreads such that if I were to taste this, I imagine I would taste red jello. That's honestly what I'm like imagining right here. But that's nothing to do with
versus crackers. Like on the yavish, like a block of cheese falls on a cube of deli or something. That's a
right? Yes, right. So if a block of cheese falls on a cube of deli, we're going to talk in Mirtz Hashem, and probably the next one, the one after, how taste exactly transfers. If two things are cold, it's very hard to say the taste transferred, right? A heat or other mediums are needed in order to allow that diffusion and transfer to happen. But right now we're just talking about the taste itself and why 60 comes, right? So the taste is of the essence, the taste even if you don't have the physical object anymore. So just if we revisit one of the questions. So right, it sounds crazy, but I was cooking chicken soup and my daughter threw in the string cheese. So if the string cheese goes in and then I take it out, and fully remove any visible cheese, what do I still have to worry about? The taste. So if I don't have 60 units against that piece of cheese to dilute the full possible amount of taste that it could have exuded into the mix, then what I'm dealing with is the taste of cheese, which is cheese itself, in meat. And that's a problem, right?
If there aren't 60 and therefore it's trafe, could you add more meat to dilute?
So that's it. No.
Or water.
Basically what you're saying, could I purposefully dilute and nullify? Right? So we're getting a little retroactively. Really, the halakha talks about it. And the concept they say is, aim vatlan iser lechatchila. You're not allowed to purposefully dilute that which is forbidden. Right? Imagine this. Like, imagine if I was allowed to dilute, then what's going to be happening is, oh, well, a little milk might taste nice in that. I won't really be able to taste it. But by the way, all these recipes, they call for these little things. You can't taste it. I'm telling you. You know, okay, does it add to the general thing? So my milk, you know, so you walk into someone's house, like, this cholent is, it's so good. What's your secret ingredient? A drop of milk, you know, 60 units. Don't worry, I got this. No. Well, once it's happened, maybe you can eat it. That guy can't, you know. So I'll enjoy, but not the host.
So
no, but really.
Are we able to rely on, like, it looks like it's the 1/60th?
Right. So how do you calculate that? Yeah. And how do you rely? So it's interesting. Basically, 60, you know, if we're doing mathematical equations, 60 just means taste, right? If I have 60 units against one, that means that there shouldn't be any taste, right? So really, either I should be able to do one of two things. If I know there's 60 to the one, I'm good to go. Or if I can taste it and I don't taste anything of the milk, then I should also be good to go.
Was that allowed to taste it?
No. No, you can't. But your next door neighbor, you know, I don't know, whatever his name is, you know.
Maybe him.
What?
I said maybe him, not them.
Yeah, okay, right. So, you know, Mr. Joe, whatever. You know, your next door non-Jewish neighbor across the street is really nice to you. You can say, hey, take a taste. What do you think? Now, the problem is, that's what they used to do in the Gemara. They used to go to basically a chef, a baker, who had like a real nice palate, who would be able to sense these types of tastes, and they'd say, hey, how's this taste to you? They wouldn't say for halakhic reasons. They'd just say, how's this taste? He'd say, it tastes a little dairy to me. Great, thank you. Okay, by the way, you can keep it if you want now, you know?
It's interesting that even comes up in the Gemara, like, that happens so often that, like, it was a common thing to go to the baker.
No, but what do you do otherwise? Right, you can't taste it, because imagine if you do taste it, you just ate meat and dairy. I mean, that's not going to fly.
Right.
That was just the suggestion. Sure. The problem is today, so it's true. That's how you do it. 60 units to one means there's no taste. So either I can taste it and know there's no taste, and essentially there's 60, or I can measure out the units. Just to realize there are exceptions to this, because again, if they're equatable, sometimes there are things like really strong tastes, like dvarim harifim, like sharp foods, or certain spices, or certain colors that no matter how much you dilute, you're going to taste it. So those don't rely on inherently 60. Those would rely on a higher number to the point that you don't taste it. Because taste is, again, and I sound like a broken recorder, taste is of the essence. I mean, that's really what it is. If you taste it, it's like you're eating the food itself. So this is just the general rule and amount Chazal measured out, saying that should dilute it properly enough so there should be no taste. Now, today...
A few questions along the way.
Yeah, please.
So if the transfer can only happen by heat, so like in this first question here about the two sets of dishes and stuff.
Yes.
If the person's going to only have cold stuff exclusively.
Yeah.
So that means that there's no transfer that can happen.
Right.
So that kind of.
Meaning there would be some allowance. So this actually comes up in hotels. Let's say I go to a hotel on vacation. I want to have cereal and milk. I check the milk. I check the cereal. It's kosher, right? We all do this. We go on vacation to hotels, you know. Free bed and breakfast. Free breakfast downstairs. By the way, don't go to a hotel that doesn't have the free food because you're totally missing out, right? Two hotels are equal. No, they're not. You know, free breakfast. And they have to make sure to look beforehand if they've got the kosher stuff. So, you know, they have the kosher cereal, the kosher milk. So to use a bowl that's perfectly clean, cold, yes, there's allowance for it. It's okay. But we wouldn't allow it in our kitchen as Ashkenazim. Because if a person were to get in such a habit, the danger of getting used to and having with heat. So already it's, I think, Paskin in the Ramah, Ramosha Israel is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazim. So he says we don't do that. But yeah, one-off basis, yes. So to this guy in question one, why can't I use the same set of dishes for food, for my cookware, for meat and dairy? So what's the answer? What does it come down to?
The taste
transfers. Taste transfers. Taste goes into the vessels and stays there. And so let's say I cook, by the way, we'll talk about metal in just one second. I have my metal thermos. No, you don't really cook in a thermos, but let's imagine this is a nice metal pot. I don't think my wife wanted me to take all our pots, so okay. We have a nice metal pot, imagine, okay? So if you were to cook meat in this, so now you have the taste of meat that's transferred into the walls of the kli, into the cookware. And then I cook dairy in it, so essentially the dairy, the meat taste goes out into the dairy. By the way, the dairy taste also goes into the pot. So anytime someone says, I just cooked dairy in my meat pot, forget 24-hour rule, we'll get to that. So two things just happened. What really you're saying is I cooked dairy in a meat pot. So that means my meat pot now has meat taste and dairy taste in it, and my food is dairy with meat taste in it, right? It goes both ways. You know, it's not a one-way street. Just keep that in mind. So that's where issues come up. Again, leaving 24 hours on the side, we'll discuss. So that's why if someone asks me, why can't I use my cookware, my kitchen, one set for everything? The answer is taste. Taste goes in, taste goes out, and ruins the food. And the taste, taste is nothing. No, taste is like the food itself. Okay, then you have to deal with nullification and the like. It is interesting. You know, people will say, you know, nowadays, come on. Metal, you know, wood, I understand, it's porous, taste can actually go in. You could see, if I were to put this red dye in here, I mean, this thing is dyed, it's done, right? Okay, the dye is a little different, but you can imagine the taste. If I have a metal pot, now this one is a little different, it's a good example from the fact that this is my coffee thing. You know, you can get 6 cups of coffee all day out of this thing. So then add in another 2. But you practically, this thing might actually taste a little bit like coffee.
Yeah, I have a thermos.
Pretty sure it's clean. But right, even though it's clean, right? No, it's true, right?
Yeah,
even though
it's true.
Clean.
I have a thermos that does the same thing.
And if you smell it, it's
after the dishwasher.
Yeah, correct. Even after the dishwasher. Yeah, by the way.
Yeah.
I was gonna say,
yes.
You would never make anything except chullen or beef stew in a crock pot.
Because it gives out a taste. It totally does. Now, okay, I'll get to, someday I'll tell a story about crock pots. But we'll get to crock pots, you know? Okay. But yeah, it exudes a taste. Now that's kli cheres. That's, is pottery. So pottery is very, very porous. I mean, just as much as, even more so than wood. So metal nowadays, a lot of people would argue, isn't porous. Nothing really goes in. What we might be smelling is lack of cleaning it. This one maybe, but I don't know. The chicken soup one, I don't know. You know, a lot of these things are pretty cleaned, right? Dishwashers, you know? I used to be my dishwasher. Now we moved into a house. It's fantastic. Actual dishwasher. But practically, what do we do about metal today? So I was looking into this, the Megillah Sefer, it's a more modern day Sefer, I didn't have it on the sheet, but he basically quotes the Chazon Ish. He says as follows, and it goes along with the rules we had. Once we determine there are rules how we deal with certain situations of taste transfer, of food going into food and the like, so there are rules on the books. And this is how you deal with X, Y, and Z situations. Meat, there's meat taste in your dairy or vice versa. Well, do you have 60? Was there taste transfer and the like? Now you'll tell me, there was no taste transfer in my metal kli, in my metal pot. And the answer is, well, how do we really know? So you could say scientifically I know, okay, it might be true. With all the nicks and cracks, by the way, it might be that it actually, forget the porous nature, it's just stuck in the walls, which is another aspect. But nowadays we said we don't rely on the taste, right? We don't go to our next door neighbor, and we certainly don't taste the food because perhaps our taste has, according to some, degraded, and it's not as sensitive towards what Chazal, towards what the rabbis were talking about. So we're back to square one, which is we have the rules of how to deal with the situation, which is the 60 versus 1 ratio. Yes, I could taste it, but since we can't fully, maybe this is one of the approaches, we can't fully trust our taste to be sensitive towards that, so we're back to the rules. And that's kind of how that's one approach to it. Listen, I'll admit, there are people who basically say as we're stacking, you know, again, we always have to stack the leniencies, stack the stringencies, the chumras and the kulas. That's how kashrus works. Really everything, you have to be aware of all the facets and they stack. It's not, you know, it's not trying to weigh the scales, but there's always factors in your mind flying this way, that way when you have a question. And some people do join this as a leniency to say our things nowadays don't really take, our metal doesn't really take in taste. They don't rely on that alone, but I read Rishon Zalman Auerbach himself, quoted by the Sefer, would have that as a factor. So just to realize, you know, we're not trying to ignore the scientific, you know, empirical data nowadays. At the same time, it could not be true. You know, I've seen arguments in both ways. But also to realize, even if maybe it is true, our taste might not be as sensitive today. So that's kind of just the approach. Just trying to think.
Does the absorption happen regardless if it's the outside of the container or the inside of the container?
It happens where... It would happen in both, but it mostly happens where there's a medium and a heat, right? So usually that's inside the container. You have the heat and the medium within the heat, like the water within the container.
So I'm thinking of like if you have some kind of container, a pot, a fork, whatever, and you put it in the sink.
Right.
And the sink could have hot water poured into it, could have,
yes,
could have hot water.
So that whatever. It can happen. We'll have to talk about how taste transfers, what type of heat we need. Sinks are almost always not the primary heat because it's being poured into something. To really get the full strength of a taste transfer, you need primary heat, which is in the original cooking vessel.
It has to be a certain degree of heat.
Yeah, it has to be a certain degree of heat. It has to be a certain degree, not just of heat, but you know, relation to the heat, where it's sitting sometimes. But mostly it has to do with the strength of the heat. Yeah, for sure. So again, how taste transfers we'll get to, and that's what we're going to talk about back and forth. Just to realize, we don't have it here, but you know, sorry about late, if I could keep you for two more minutes to finish this. To realize like this, there are good tastes and there are bad tastes. Taste, in order to be like the food, needs to enhance. If I have garbage, it's not treif. Garbage is garbage. If I have pork that has degraded and become so gross to the point it's inedible, we might have other reasons you shouldn't eat it besides for health standards. No, but I'm saying even cautious. But it's no longer good taste. So when we talk about good taste and all the taste we're talking about, it has to be good. It has to be enhancing. If it's bad, if it makes something taste like garbage, so then that's not what we're forbidding.
That's so subjective a lot of the time.
It might,
like,
yes.
You're saying like when it's not subjective.
Right, when it's not subjective. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about mostly non-subjective things.
Right.
So just a little taste. No pun intended. To realize, and we'll hopefully get to this next, and that is after 24 hours, well, in general, food taste might be pretty subjective at the point that it goes. At some point, it's objectively garbage, right?
Right, yeah.
So that is more subjective, I'll give you. When it comes to vessels, when it comes to cookware and the taste going in, that's not subjective. The rabbi set a time limit to that. After 24 hours, we do not consider that to be taste that enhances. And all of a sudden, we realize, where did 24 hours come from? And we'll touch on this more. 24 hours come from the fact that the taste is no longer potent and able to make something taste good and enhance. So all of a sudden, what do I really have? I have bad taste after 24 hours coming into my food. That doesn't enhance. That's not good. And so all of a sudden you're like, oh, why does it matter 24 hours? Because that taste that we were so scared about, that tastes like the pork itself and that is like the pork itself, not anymore after 24 hours.
But it's still a fleishigamelchik dish, right?
Yes. So the dish, right, it's a two-way street, right? Exactly. It's a two-way street. So the dish itself itself has an issue now. But the food might be okay. Again, don't everyone run home and paskin based on this. Like, this is, we're trying to build the klalim, and there are, you know, the few questions that we're trying to address each time, and we'll get more practical, but to realize that this is the baseline of what we're discussing. Just the last thing. I saw something beautiful in the Sfas Emes. It's not a shir until you end with a Sfas Emes. You know, some chassidish thing to realize all this isn't just practical in your kitchen, it's practical in, you know, yourself. He says, you know, there are two types of taste in the world. There's the taste that a person likes steak. Steak tastes great. But if a person keeps tasting good things in this world, eventually they lose its taste. A person who eats steak every single night, I don't know. Yeah, probably. If you eat steak every single day, dinner, lunch, it's going to lose its taste. It's no good. But when it comes to ruchnius, when it comes to spiritual things, so even if stuff doesn't start off with taste, tam, or reason, right? Tam can mean two things. It can mean taste or reason. even if things don't start off with reason, I don't really fully understand it, or sometimes it doesn't even taste good to me. I'm not feeling it. So to realize that the longer we expose ourselves to and the longer we try to inculcate it into our lives, the more reasoning we sometimes find and the better it tastes. And that's like Yiddishkeit, that's Judaism, like, and all the things we try to expose ourselves to. So he ends off and he says, so why is it that we don't taste the sweetness sometimes of Yiddishkeit, of mitzvos, of all these spiritual things? He says, because l'mashamah devardoma. Imagine I have an artificial candy that's not so good for you. And I eat that, and I eat a lot of it. Tastes great, right? Not so good for you. And I taste honey. The honey doesn't taste that sweet. So what we expose ourselves to, what we're involved in, numbs us a little to the masikas, the beauty of Torah, and how much there is there. And I thought it was just a beautiful idea to talk about. Tom Kicker, taste is of the essence. And that means both Tom in the sense of the reasoning in Torah and the reasoning in life and trying to find things that resonate with us. And also Tom, the sweetness, you know. Things have to have a good Tom. They have to have a good taste. But we also have to realize the more we involve ourselves, taste, you know, will come. Anyway, okay, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, Mitzvah Hashem will continue on with the 24-hour rule next. And that's really going to come into when you call up the guy, you know, okay, so is my food okay? So maybe we won't have to call. No, you have to call. But okay, all right, guys.
Thank you.